Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome again to How's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight is one of our legal topics episodes, and we will be dealing with the topic of leaving your heirs at home while you're still alive. And here's our host, as always, Robert Howe.
Well, welcome everyone to How's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, of Rising Tide Marketing. And tonight is our legal topics program, and Jason has chosen the topic of estate planning, leaving a home to heirs while you're still alive. And, Jason, this is a little funny, this headline, leaving a home to heirs while you're still alive. It does sort of make you believe that you're giving your house away while you're still alive, but as we get into the article a little more, we'll see that that's not necessarily true. But having said that, as an attorney practicing both real estate and trust and estate, I do get a fair amount of people that come in, parents, and they want to leave or give the house to their kids like right then and there. And it's sort of my job to inform them a little, slow them down a little, give them a few options, and find out why such a haste in transferring property. And it's interesting, all of these anecdotal stories that are floating around, you know, some people hear and they believe, like, I hate to use the word fake news, but fake legal truth, and then they run over to their lawyer and want to, you know, protect themselves against it. But it is an interesting topic, you know, one way of transferring, you know, your property to your heirs, a part of a larger, it's a small topic and a larger topic of transferring your assets to your heirs. What is your take on the article?
Well, it's a very interesting topic and one that we seem to have broached from a variety of different ways. We've talked about wills, we've talked about estate planning, we've talked about, we've covered a number of topics in our videos about the different ways you can bequeath assets to heirs. This is an interesting one. I don't think we've ever really tackled this, aside from in one instance where we talked about, I believe it was in a recap episode, how people are helping their kids get homes today. That's what jumped out at me when I was reading the articles, that I recalled that story about there are numerous ways today parents were helping their kids, either by co-signing a loan or, you know, outright, you know, buying a place with them. And one of the ways I think I recall was that they would process of transferring ownership of maybe their home to their kids, and then they would either, you know, live with them. So that jumped out at me right away as something that we talked about not too long ago, and I thought that was a very interesting new angle. I don't know if this has changed since over the course of you practicing law, if you've noticed a shift in this, and people didn't usually, not that I recall when I was a kid, you know, leave their homes or property to family members until, you know, they shuffled off this mortal coil. Have you noticed that this is something that's becoming more and more common?
Well, yes, because there are a couple of new factors that have come into play. And we'll discuss this a little later on, but the new factors is a tax law, Medicaid planning, fear of probate, and also, you know, several firms make a livelihood out of, you know, making trust and making people believe that they need trust. And certainly there are, you know, reasons, very good reasons to have trust. So those factors, also the fact that, you know, the people now selling their houses, you know, they bought them 30, 40 years ago for, say, $20,000, and now they're, you know, $1.5 million to, you know, whatever crazy number you can think of in the real estate world. So all of, you know, the stratospheric appreciation, which I don't think was around when our parents owned the property. They may have bought it for 20, and then it kind of creeped up to 22 and creeped up a little more. But over the last two decades, Americans have seen, you know, exponential jumps in property values where, you know, people in good neighborhoods saw great appreciation. People in bad neighborhoods that became hot neighborhoods to a stratospheric appreciation. And, of course, then, you know, where there's money, people start focusing on it and how to get their hands on it and how to transfer it without Uncle Sam being involved or without the state being involved. So, you know, those are all the topics, but that have changed the conversation, which is what you asked. You know, the conversation has changed because of tax laws, Medicaid laws, stratospheric appreciation, you know, that has changed the conversation a little. But you did mention that the old-fashioned way, and still a good way to do it, is, you know, give your property away by a will after you're not around. And that still works. But there are also stories that have grown up around wills and probates. And I always tell clients that these stories you only hear the bad news about wills and probates and surrogates court. You hear the story about the, I always say, the 90-year-old millionaire. Of course, now we probably have to say billionaire, because if you own a house in New York, you're a millionaire. So probably we have to, I have to change my story to the 90-year-old billionaire who marries a 25-year-old person whose profession is a pole dancing, which is an honorable profession, you know, if you're in a studio and teaching other people how to, you know, exercise through the use of pole dancing exercises. But sometimes these 90-year-old billionaires don't marry those type of people. They marry somebody in a less desirable, bar setting. And the kids who are now like in their 60s really get crazy because they see their inheritance going out the window. And many times, you know, the 25-year-old pole dancer does somehow insinuate herself, or we should say himself, if it's reversed, a 90-year-old woman who's a billionaireess marrying a 25-year-old Chippendale dancer, you know, just to be politically correct here. And the kids now get snookered out of their inheritance. And that's what makes the papers and the news and makes everybody skittish. And honestly, that's not the norm. The norm is you have a family, a mom and dad, they have three kids. You know, mom and dad ultimately pass away, and the three kids look at mom and dad's will. It says, when mom and dad are not around, everything to my three children equally. And, you know, sometimes they make the oldest the executor. Sometimes they make the more business-minded one the executor. And they retain an attorney, and papers get dropped into court. Everybody signs off, and they move to the next stage, which is to sell the house and divide the proceeds. So, you know, stories also, you know, revolve around, or you know, so if, even if there's not a fight, there are stories that have grown up around fees that the court takes. Well, the court only, you know, takes a couple thousand dollars. The fee that the lawyers take, lawyers generally charge in the vicinity of what the executor gets, 3%, 4%, or 5% of the estate. Not exorbitant, but you know, you do have, you know, you are involved in a, you know, in administering an estate, and it does cost money to have professionals, lawyers, and accountants, real estate brokers, all involved, and a lot of them charge on a percentage basis, a small percentage basis. And but of course, again, you only hear of the lawyers or the fees that run up into the hundreds of thousands of dollars because of some glitch in the estate or some wrangling among the beneficiaries. But by and large, you know, mom and dad, three kids, plain vanilla will. There's usually not a heck of a lot of expenses or delay involved in it. And unfortunately, all we hear about is the bad stories. We don't hear about, you know, the easy, fast stories where everybody's happy at the end of the probate. But along comes, so building on those, a lot of those false stories or fake stories about expenses of probate, time of probate, all the things that could go wrong in probate, people have now focused, or not have now, you know, do ask about trust. Trust is something you create an entity called a trust, and you put your property into a trust, whether it be your accounts, bank accounts, stock accounts. You can put real property in your house, and you name a trustee. And in the trust document, it says so-and-so can either live in the house for as long as they live or enjoy the benefits of the house or enjoy the income from the house. And then when they pass away, it'll go to my three children. So what that really cuts out is it cuts out the time that paperwork could be pending in surrogate's court, and you don't really need the surrogate to pass on the validity of the trust document. Most of the time, there is no review of a trust document, although in some cases there could be if there was fraud or duress in making the trust document. But for the most part, trusts say everything to A while they're alive, and upon their death, then to B, C, and D. So that really cuts out the surrogate and the court part of the proceeding. But what it does do, on the front end, there are expenses to creating trusts, and I dare say trusts could run in the low thousands to several thousand dollars, depending on the planning, you know, that's involved, you know, in the estate. Then, of course, you have to transfer the assets into the estate, so there's also document drafting fees and filing fees to get the house out of John and Mary Smith's name into the John and Mary Smith Trust document or entity. So I always tell clients, you really have a choice between making a will, which is a little less expensive. It's changeable. It is supervised by the court at some point to make sure that everything is correct and that if people are wrong, they have some recourse. Or pay me now, you know, create a trust, put everything into the trust, and then at the end, it's a relatively simple, you know, getting out of it is a relatively simple deal. So those are the differences between the the two ways of transferring, the two of the ways of transferring property, out of your name into your heirs' names. I don't know if you have thoughts or heard of any instances of parents doing this, you know, for the benefit of their children.
I haven't heard this particular scenario, but I do know cases where parents have sold homes and then gone into a new property with a child. But I have yet to, even though I read these stories and I see a lot of these come up from time to time in our recaps, I don't know anyone personally that's done this, but it sounds like this is something that is, is very commonplace. And it seems to make sense, not going into the whole issue of the trust, because the trust does seem like a setup or a step that, you know, may not be for everybody. But it does sound like in a lot of cases where you have especially in New York, where you have a substantial increase that has occurred over the past couple of decades, and now you're looking to downsize. And, if you bought a large home that was three stories with a basement, and then, maybe now in your retirement you don't want to walk three flights of stairs anymore and you want to downsize, it sounds like a very reasonable thing to do and say, hey, I want to pass this on to my kids now, rather than have to continue and see potentially a fight or potentially maybe something happen to an older home. If you've owned a home a long time, and maybe you might say, hey, before the roof goes on this house or before something goes that I might take a substantial loss on, maybe better to bequeath it now.
Yeah, well, there is the old-fashioned way of just giving it to your child while you're alive. That is not a very good idea, because you've just given away probably your biggest asset that you've ever owned. And once you give it to your child could get into all sorts of issues and problems, and that could negatively affect the property. And, you know, as important as, you know, the children couldn't get into an issue, there's a huge tax question of the child inheriting the basis of what the parents bought the house for, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, that $20,000 number that, you know, the parents buy for $20,000, they give it to you, it's $1 million, you are, like, overjoyed that your parents just gave you this $1 million house until 10 years later when you sell and your accountant says, Jason, you know, your basis is $20,000 and you're selling it for $2 million. So it feels good to get a gift. You know, at some point you will end up spending a substantial amount of money, you know, in taxes. One way to avoid that, you can give your children the house. You may have heard the term reserve a life estate or a life tenancy. So there is also that concept. You could give it to your child and in the deed say, but I reserve a life tenancy, meaning they can live there and or have veto power over anything the child does, you know, for the rest of the parents' lives. So the kid can't kick out the parents or sell the house from underneath them without the parents being involved. Of course, that still doesn't protect the parents in the event that the children get into a lawsuit issue, either a lawsuit issue or a matrimonial issue, or they have a medical or drug or alcohol issues. So, you know, once you give it away, once you start getting other people involved, you are expanding the opportunity to have things go wrong. I do want to mention that I always, you know, whenever a client comes in with a scheme like this, I always say, look, the person that we also need involved in this is your accountant, because your accountant will tell us whether or not financially this makes, you know, a good deal. Either your accountant or if you have a trusted financial advisor, you know, that person can give you good advice. But I do want to mention also, getting back to trust for a second, there are two types of trust. The plain vanilla trust, which, you know, is called revocable or revocable, sort of like you say potato, I say potato, but revocable or revocable trust, meaning you can change your mind. So, you know, a year into it, you may say, I don't like this trust anymore. I want to take it back out. There's really no consequence, you know, to taking it out of a revocable trust. But then you get to irrevocable trusts. Irrevocable trusts mean you can't change your mind. Once you put it in, it's in. And that's the bad thing. Clients don't like to hear the word irrevocable, not changeable. You can't change your mind. You can't come back to me and say, I made a mistake. You have just done something from which there is no turning back. So that's the bad, not necessarily the bad part, but it, you know, you've made a decision, and that's it. The good part is it starts the clock ticking on a couple of different things. The big reason people do irrevocable trust nowadays, two, one is for Medicaid purposes. There's a 5-year look-back period. So by putting your house into an irrevocable trust, you know, you have the opportunity after 5 years to have that property excluded, you know, from your calculations if you need to go into a nursing home. So that is a good thing. Of course, an alternative to having to do an irrevocable trust and putting your house in for Medicaid purposes is to buy long-term care insurance, which is an excellent product. It was so excellent that insurance companies are now limiting or not offering the product anymore because it was so good. But if you do have it, it's a good way to keep your house and still get on Medicaid and still not have to do this irrevocable trust issue. The other thing about irrevocable trust, aside from Medicaid, is also for taxes. In some instances, by using irrevocable trust, you can pretty much set a line of the value of your estate and any further appreciation of the asset will not be attributed to your estate. So if you, say, put in a stock that was worth or stocks that were worth $100,000, that sort of sets the line right there from which other calculations will be done. And if your stock appreciates, you know, to $1 million, then that is not calculated against your estate. So there is some, you know, beneficial stuff to irrevocable, but I dare say the majority of my clients, once they hear the word irrevocable and not changeable and you can't change your mind, their ears pretty much shut and they have had their fill of what trusts are and really don't want to do anything. They want a simple will which is flexible and changeable, and that's the way they want to go. So trusts are good. Irrevocable trusts are very good. But who wants to roll the dice and give away one of their assets? I don't know if you have any friends who are giving their property, putting their properties, or talking about Medicaid planning, but giving stuff away is the way to avoid or to get on Medicaid faster, giving stuff away. But once again, people don't like to give stuff away while they're still, you know, young and healthy. So there's always a little bit of a balancing, you know, act. And that's really, the discussion on ways to give away your property. Wait till you pass away. Have a will or the trust. The only good thing about passing away, I tell people, is that you get a stepped up basis. So the parents who bought the house for $20,000, they pass away when it's $1 million. The kids get it at $1 million. And if they sell it for $1 million, there's no capital gains tax. And then all behind this, you know, the tax law just changed, the estate tax law just changed, and the starting point for taxation at the federal level was about $5 million and change. It's almost double that to $11 million and change. So not many of my friends have a tax issue now, but I do remember, you know, being in law school, the limit was about $100,000 at that point, and then the taxes kicked in. So there was a lot, at that point people didn't get up to $100,000, but as inflation occurred, they did get up to $100,000. So everybody started scrambling, planning, and then maybe the estate tax went up. I forget the increments, but maybe $500,000. Nobody had a problem anymore. Then people crept up to $500,000, and they had a problem again. And then it became $1 million, and now it became $5 million, and now it became $11 million. So, if you own a property in New York City, you are in the $1 million range. You know, your estate value is $1 million range. So it'll take a while to creep up, but it will creep up like everything. And, once again, people will be scrambling to keep up. And in the background, of course, you hear that we have struck the time that our show is over. Of course, we always give the advice that, whatever I say should be discussed with your own tax professional, your financial professional, and your legal professional. Because the examples that I give, sort of like apples and oranges, are not applicable for everybody. Everybody is a little different, and you should consult your own professional to see if what we talked about is suitable to you. And that's
and with that, we're at the end of our episode. We had a very interesting topic, a very timely topic, and especially being in New York, one that is does affect more people than not. And we come to the end of another one of our Legal Topics episodes, and time for you to take us out.
Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people, wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I'm your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.